That was a Sanskrit chant to the Divine Mother, sung by the Ramakrishna nuns in Santa Barbara, California. And it's the Divine Mother we praise today in her form as Ramakrishna, his wife Sarada, and their chosen deity, Mahakali. But it's this primal energy and wisdom that takes all the forms that we see and our... In celebrating Ramakrishna's birthday, which occurs next Friday, our spirit should be one of embracing all the traditions with reverence and with love. Ramakrishna is actually behind the creation of this program in the spirit, because 7 years ago, Paul Gorman conceived of the idea of doing a radio program which opened itself to the various sacred traditions while he was reading a book of the conversations of Ramakrishna that I had given him. And he was sitting in solitude on the side of a mountain in a tent and reading this day after day, and conceived the idea of having a transmission of spirit over through the medium of radio, not simply a matter of information, but an actual transmission of mystical experience. And that's what we're going to try and do this morning in a very grassroots way. I'm here with dear friends, musicians, and we're going to... None of us are ordained or in any way have the title of spiritual leaders or priests. We simply are human beings, and we feel that through simple human devotion and wisdom, that something very profound can be transmitted. And we ask you to open yourself to this morning. Ramakrishna's basic message gives us the courage to embrace all the sacred traditions and to try and rise above or stand aside from their traditional battles and arguments and disagreements that are going on between the traditions, and that really are going to disappear, or have to disappear to a certain extent now, in order for a kind of harmony and planetary civilization to dawn. Above a message which you can put into words, such as embracing all sacred traditions, there's something more profound that Ramakrishna represents, which is a kind of spiritual presence. And this is felt directly and doesn't have any verbal content. And although Ramakrishna died in 1886 and his wife Sarada died in the 1920s, since they realized the divine, they have become a permanent current in the ocean of divine consciousness. In that sense, they're perfectly one with the divine. They've perfectly disappeared in the divine, and yet as a current, they retain a certain movement, a certain direction, a certain quality of experience. And this is something that we should all feel this morning. Recently I did a program in which I had a conversation with an angelic being through Pat Rodecast, who was in light trance and who channeled the words of this being through. What we should have this morning is an even higher level of communication, because we're not going to be communicating with the angelic realms. We're going to be feeling a presence that flows right from the heart of Godhead itself, but in a totally natural, simple way, without any occult overtones. I have to say that the dear friends with me this morning are the Quinn brothers and the Quinn sister, as we say. You may remember them from the program we did with Baba Ram Dass when they played and sung. And Marty Quinn is playing tabla, and Doug Quinn playing guitar, acoustic guitar. Eve Quinn will be playing auto harp and also reading. And they are Baha'is, and will be, in the course of the program, reading something from Baha'u'llah about divine manifestation. And the other musician is my friend Steve Kindler, who's composed a song for today, will be performing on violin and guitar and in voice. And Eve will be also singing with him. We're going to begin this whole collage by with Eve reading from an essay that will be published this spring in my book called Coming Home, an essay on Ramakrishna, in an attempt to express the essence of his transmission, which is it's a way of embracing tradition but transcending at the same time, just transcending the languages of all traditions, a kind of paradoxical position which I think is going to be very, very useful for the contemporary world. And Eve will be reading with her innate clarity and penetration, and I hope we'll feel a kind of basic sense of vision and understanding, and then later as more more devotional mood is expressed, that on that basis of clarity and understanding, then devotion can come. And it's as a song that Ramakrishna used to sing that we'll be singing today, reciting today for you. In wisdom's firmament, the moon of love is rising full. So in the sky of knowledge, there has to be kind of a sky of clarity for the full moon to rise into. And this kind of interplay of knowledge and ecstatic love is what Ramakrishna was an adept at, and what his presence awakens in us. So the reading will be interspersed with kind of brief musical meditations spontaneously coming from these friends and instruments that we have around us. So let's hear some music and then read.
The Tantric Way of the Goddess Kali, Ramakrishna of Bengal. Ramakrishna was completely at home in all the moods of spiritual expression he encountered, from Christianity and Islam to widely contrasting strands of Hinduism. Born in 1836 in a rural village of Bengal, untouched by European influence, Ramakrishna possessed a universal spiritual vision rare in any culture. He experienced all religions as a single spectrum of wisdom and devotion, as a communion of the divine with the divine, in which both worshipper and worshipped emerge from the same ultimate consciousness. Ramakrishna never preached. For him, each individual spiritual development is unique. To one person, he would suggest a certain approach, and to another, perhaps the contrary approach. His utterances were ecstatic. His parables are songs for meditation, not rational explanations that constitute any system of theology. Ramakrishna considered himself a child of Goddess Kali, the divine mother of the universe. As a child who knew nothing and decided nothing, he would speak and act spontaneously as she spoke and acted through him. He did not even regard himself as a guru or teacher. When holy scholars proclaimed him to be an avatar or special emanation of the divine, Ramakrishna sat among them unself-consciously, intoxicated by the bliss of divine presence, half-naked, chewing spices and repeating, "If you say I am, you must be right, but I know nothing about it." However, although knowing nothing, this child of the Divine Mother was intensely sensitive. He responded to subtle changes of psychic and spiritual energy as plants respond to their environment. Once, Ramakrishna was observing from the temple garden two boatmen exchanging blows far out on the river Ganges. Marks from these blows appeared immediately on his own body. The language of Ramakrishna's parables is deceptively simple. We must be careful not to crystallize this language or to develop one-sided ideas about his teachings. Ramakrishna often remarked that the most serious distortion of spiritual life is the one-sidedness which makes us cling exclusively to a particular viewpoint. His guiding vision was that of the continuum of consciousness, in which all forms or viewpoints take shape and dissolve like bubbles in a stream. Ramakrishna's was a comprehensive way of devotion to the divine forms revealed in all sacred traditions. But his was simultaneously a way of wisdom that never perceived divine forms or attributes as separate from their source or ultimate consciousness. Ecstatically to experience all forms as one continuum of consciousness, which Ramakrishna identified as Goddess Kali in her all-embracing aspect, is the tantric attitude by which the ways of wisdom and devotion are fused. Through this tantric attitude, Ramakrishna helped to release advanced spiritual seekers from the limits of their formal practices and religious perspectives into the flow of ultimate consciousness or enlightenment. While certain traditional paths of wisdom insist that the formless ground or absolute alone is real and that divine and human forms are an illusion, Ramakrishna never makes such straight demarcation between form and formless, relative and absolute. For him, the divine form, such as Krishna or Christ, does not obscure the formless absolute, nor is the divine form obliterated in the absolute. Ramakrishna simply responded to the stream of ultimate consciousness, which has no intrinsic form, yet expresses itself fully through all sacred traditions and through manifest being itself. Resembling this universal stream of consciousness, Ramakrishna flowed freely and reverently through diverse spiritual moods, fully embodying each, yet exclusively aligned with none. The advanced practitioners who encountered Ramakrishna were each strongly identified with a certain traditional approach to the divine. The first of these was the Brahmani, an adept in the practices of Tantra, as well as the Hindu devotional moods in which God is worshipped through the intimate relationships of friend, child, and lover. The Brahmani was a spiritually powerful woman in her 50s when she arrived at the Dakshineswar temple garden where Ramakrishna resided. Looking at him just once, as he sat in a blissful mood contemplating his divine mother Kali, the Brahmani felt for Ramakrishna the overwhelming attraction a mother feels for her child. That same day, she experienced the culmination of her years of meditation practice. The Brahmani always carried with her a stone lingam, symbol of transcendental divine wisdom, which she used for formal worship and meditation. Daily, she would cook food and offer it to the divine power, which sacramentally manifested itself through the stone. She would then meditate in the radiance of divine presence. After encountering Ramakrishna, the Brahmani built her fire by the Ganges and cooked the food to be offered in worship. Ramakrishna, who was dozing in his room on the other side of the temple garden, awakened in a mood of divine intoxication. He often entered such moods spontaneously as he became responsive to some current of spiritual energy being evoked through authentic worship. He wandered in ecstasy toward the site of the Brahmani's ceremonial offering, arriving just as she completed the invocation. He sat beside the holy lingam and began to eat the consecrated food. For a moment, the orthodox Brahmani was shocked, but then her spiritual vision opened. She perceived through Ramakrishna a full expression of the divine power she had worshipped daily for decades through the medium of the stone lingam. Seated there by the river, she entered a deep meditation in which her form, the form of the sacred stone, and the form of Ramakrishna were each fully revealed as ultimate consciousness. Some hours later, she consigned the stone to the waters of the Ganges, realizing that this ritual practice was no longer necessary to evoke divine presence. Nor did she worship Ramakrishna daily in place of the lingam. He had released her from the concept of formal worship, fulfilling her spiritual longing by manifesting the sacramental presence through his own person and then becoming transparent to ultimate consciousness. Named Jatadhari was another advanced worshipper who came into contact with Ramakrishna. Jatadhari carried with him a small metal image of the child Rama, venerated by Hindus as an incarnation of God. The motherly Jatadhari would not only feed the holy child, but take it swimming in the Ganges and play tag with it in the fields. His life was totally dedicated to the loving nurture of this child as a form of the divine. To his illumined vision, the inanimate metal image appeared as a boy of light. He could actually see the child Rama dance and hear him laugh. This highly evolved practitioner could contemplate the spiritual realm not only with eyes closed in deep trance states, but also while living daily life. Practitioners of this level have so thoroughly experienced the dreamlike nature of our conventional universe that they encounter the simultaneous presence of alternate universes populated by divine forms, whose intense purity transforms all experience into devotion and wisdom. But there is always the danger of becoming confined within one of these alternate universes, forgetting that the ordinary universe is also a manifestation of divine power, and that no universe exclusively expresses the divine. Ramakrishna released seekers from the confines of any and every world view into the continuum of consciousness. He led Jatadhari out of the realm of this divine child in an amusing way. Jatadhari, seated in the temple garden, would notice the child missing. After anxious search, he would find Ramlala playing with Ramakrishna. Jatadhari was taken aback, for he had encountered no one else who could perceive and play with the spiritual energy focused through the image. More and more, the child Rama played with Ramakrishna. More and more, Jatadhari was left alone, until one day a deep realization dawned. Jatadhari approached Ramakrishna and exclaimed, "I give you this image of Ramlala. I have been worshipping it for many years, and now understand that I need it no longer." Ramakrishna in no way implied to Jatadhari that his visionary experience had been illusion, but simply fulfilled his spiritual longing. Jatadhari had come to regard Ramakrishna and the divine child, as well as his own being, as transparent forms of the same ultimate consciousness. This is the tantric way, in which form and formless are seen as equivalent, free from any need for ritual practice. All movements become spontaneous worship, as human forms and various divine forms are seen to appear and disappear in the same ultimate consciousness. Please consider one other advanced practitioner who came in contact with Ramakrishna and was open beyond traditional practice into all-embracing presence. Totapuri was a wandering monk who followed the path of wisdom taught by Advaita Vedanta. All the adepts we have discussed so far were rooted in the devotional experience of divine forms. But Totapuri was an adept of the formless reality, the cloudless sky of the Absolute. He regarded the worship of divine forms as childish. Naked and smeared with ashes, Totapuri strolled through the Dakshineswar temple garden and noticed Ramakrishna seated there, clapping his hands ecstatically and chanting Mother Kali's name. Totapuri recognized at once that Ramakrishna, despite his appearance as a simple devotee of the goddess, was inwardly prepared to receive initiation into the knowledge of the Absolute, in which all forms and all emotions are left behind. Ramakrishna functioned as a mirror. Various advanced practitioners perceived him to be fully prepared in precisely their own contemplative ways. Totapuri approached Ramakrishna with the proposal that he receive initiation into Advaita Vedanta. Ramakrishna replied, "I must ask my mother Kali." He entered the temple and received permission from the living divinity that he experienced pulsating through the stone image enshrined there. That evening, Totapuri began instructing him in formless meditation. But as Ramakrishna concentrated deeply, the radiant figure of the goddess appeared to his inner eye. When he reported this to Totapuri, the austere, naked monk took a sharp stone and pressed it firmly against Ramakrishna's forehead, instructing him to concentrate on the pain and assuring him that he could transcend the divine form and merge into the infinite expanse of the Absolute. Once more, Ramakrishna meditated, and as he later expressed it, "With the sword of wisdom I cut through the divine form of Kali." Her form dissolved, and his individuality completely disappeared into her formless aspect. For 3 days, Ramakrishna was completely lost to the world, seated in the small meditation hut, motionless, breathing suspended. Totapuri was amazed. He had practiced for 40 years to achieve this experience of nirvikalpa samadhi, or disappearance of individual identity in the Absolute. This had occurred to Ramakrishna in a single sitting. Totapuri, as an orthodox wandering monk, never remained more than 3 days in one location, but he spent 10 months at Dakshineswar because of the intense attraction he felt toward Ramakrishna. During this long stay, he contracted serious dysentery. There was prolonged and severe pain, which was distracting Totapuri during meditation. Since he considered the body just a medium, essentially unnecessary after the realization of the Absolute, he decided to give up his body by drowning in the Ganges. The tide was such that he walked far into the river without reaching deep water. When he looked back, he saw the Kali temple gleaming in moonlight and experienced a sudden deep awakening to the presence of the goddess. He recognized her as sheer divine power and consciousness, moving through all beings and controlling all events, including his own attempt to discard the body. He now understood the Divine Mother to be the sublime dream power of the Absolute. What he had been calling Maya, or the mere illusion of forms, was actually the goddess who projects, nurtures, and dissolves all beings. Totapuri thus accepted the manifest universe and its energy as a radiant expression of the Absolute. The demarcation between form and formless no longer existed for him. He accompanied Ramakrishna to the temple and bowed reverently before the image of Kali. Perhaps the central theme of Ramakrishna's spiritual life was his communion with Goddess Kali. Ramakrishna's last words before his physical death were the repetition of the mantra Om Kali, confirming that he was indissolubly related to the goddess as her worshipper and as her emanation. All other divine forms, as well as the formless absolute, Ramakrishna regarded as expressions of her. This is characteristic of the tantric way, the forms of guru and chosen deity. In Ramakrishna's case, Kali herself is the root guru, are never obliterated by the experience of the formless or lost sight of in the ecstatic embrace of all forms. Intense devotion for guru and deity remains central to the illumined practitioner's spiritual life, even in the midst of perfect unitary wisdom. Simultaneously, the tantric practitioner develops a sense of identification with guru and deity, the sense of being an emanation of the deity as well as an eternal worshipper, being the guru as well as the eternal disciple. On the special feast day of the goddess, while talking and laughing with his disciples, Ramakrishna would spontaneously assume the mudra of Kali, hands raised to bless and to destroy, remaining transfigured for long periods of time, deep in bhava samadhi, or absorption in the deity, oblivious of his human body and the ordinary world. In that mood, he would actually become a visible manifestation of Kali, radiating the power of her blessing, which those present would experience as joy and illumination. This was not a case of possession by the deity, but a temporary revelation of Ramakrishna's own intrinsic Kali nature. Then the mood would pass, and he would again appear as the powerless and playful child of the Divine Mother. Ramakrishna's veneration of the feminine aspect of the divine extended to all women, whom he regarded as special manifestations of the goddess. We notice how important women are in Ramakrishna's life. His wife and first disciple, Sarada Devi, is regarded as his spiritual equal, a twin emanation of Kali. They were a single feminine current of divine energy expressed through two bodies. Sarada always regarded her divinely intoxicated husband as the blissful goddess herself, not only as a human being. And once Sarada asked Ramakrishna, "What do you think of me?" Ramakrishna replied, "She who gave me physical birth also appears as the Divine Mother Kali, and you too are that same mother." Sarada became the spiritual successor of Ramakrishna, guiding his disciples and transmitting visionary power to thousands of seekers after his death. Mother Kali was the aspect of the divine that Ramakrishna most often worshipped, not simply as the black, four-armed, ecstatically playful goddess with whom he could converse face to face, but also as the infinite womb, the formless matrix of all forms, the continuum of consciousness. For Ramakrishna, the ultimate consciousness in which all forms appear and disappear was neither masculine nor neuter, but distinctly feminine. From the Advaita Vedanta standpoint, the absolute, called Atman or Brahman, is without gender. But even the staunch Vedantist Totapuri eventually accepted Ramakrishna's worship of the goddess in order fully to embrace manifest being as ultimate consciousness. This prominence of the feminine principle reflects the tantric attitude, which regards all women as particularly powerful conduits for the goddess, transmitting her power of compassion and wisdom. Ramakrishna's relation to Goddess Kali was primarily that of child to mother, a clear expression of Ramakrishna's intensely childlike attitude, was his powerlessness, his refusal to perform healings and other miracles by exerting psychic and spiritual powers to which he could have had access. "It is all up to the mother," he would ecstatically proclaim. "I am simply her child." At the end of his life, when he was suffering from throat cancer, his disciples implored him to pray to Goddess Kali to be cured. He demurred, but they insisted. Ramakrishna gives this account of his subsequent conversation with the Divine Mother of the Universe. "I said to her, 'Mother, I cannot swallow food because of my pain. Make it possible for me to eat a little.' She pointed you all out to me and said, 'What? You are eating enough through all these mouths. Isn't that so?' I was ashamed and could not utter another word." Kali thus asked Ramakrishna to identify with all sentient beings as his own being. Identification with all is compassion grounded in the wisdom that perceives the perfect unity of all. Ramakrishna's compassion took the form of intense longing to transmit spiritual energy to authentic lovers of God, and through them to the entire planet. Ramakrishna would weep and cry out to Mother Kali to send him a few pure and powerful disciples who could receive and hold the divine energy that flooded his being. However, in the midst of this intense concern, he perceived that the continuum of consciousness alone exists, that consciousness is transmitting only to consciousness. As Ramakrishna used to explain, "I searched for I, but found that it is all the Divine Mother."
Thank you. Thine own Shakti, too.
was
a song called My Prayer to Thee, written by Steve Kindler, which is just for today. And I'd like to say that you're listening to BAI in New York. This is In the Spirit. Bill Young, the engineer, reminds me I've got to say WBAI in New York in order to satisfy the FCC. And we're celebrating the birthday of Ramakrishna, who lived from 1836 to 1886 in Bengal, and whose birthday, according to the lunar calendar, is coming up this Friday. And the musicians you heard playing were Marty Quinn on tabla, Doug Quinn on acoustic guitar, Steve Kindler on acoustic guitar and violin, and Eve Quinn on voice, and Steve also sang. We're going to, in this attempt to transmit authentic spiritual presence over the air, we're going to have Steve read from a remarkable book, which is called The Gospel of Ramakrishna. And it's over 1,000 pages of conversations and daily life situations in the Dakshineswar temple garden between Ramakrishna and some of his disciples and friends. And I had the good fortune to study and meditate in close relationship with the translator of this work, Swami Nikalananda, who put it into English and from the Bengali. And I have a very intimate association with this Gospel of Ramakrishna. I feel that was how I originally found out about Ramakrishna's manifestation, and I think it's a very special book, and it's available in various places in the city. And I'll mention now and mention again at the end of the program that a free catalog of all of the Ramakrishna material and related mystical traditions can be got from the Vedanta Press in Hollywood, California. That's at 1946 Vedanta Place in Los Angeles. And I'm sure they'd be happy to hear from you and we'll send you a catalog. To say a few things about the gospel, it presents a very living, rich, authentic picture of a person who was immersed in his culture, immersed in his spiritual traditions, and yet at the same time, as we've tried to show earlier, really transcended all cultures and simply communed with the purest form of God, which is pure divine consciousness. And he somehow made a balance between someone who was rooted in the sacred earth of his culture and at the same time was free to fly in the sky, unlimited by any culture. And this is the kind of balance that we have to establish, and it can't be established through intellectual work. It has to be established through meditation, and evoking Ramakrishna is a helpful way because he's the patron saint of the spiritual universalist, but someone who still remains rooted in rich traditions. We're going to hear a little bit of the nuns of Santa Barbara chanting a song in praise of Ramakrishna, and then we'll go into the reading. And I think if everyone opens themselves, each of us will be blessed in a different way, because it was not Ramakrishna's approach to lead everyone along a particular path. He would give little sparks. He would be moving very freely between different spiritual moods, and he would give little sparks to different people at different chakras with different temperaments all the time. So the nuns at Santa Barbara, California. This is a record that is published by the Vedanta Society also in California.
Thank you.
Panchavati, the temples, and the river. Evening worship began in the different temples, accompanied by the sound of bells, gongs, and conch shells. Sri Ramakrishna bowed before the pictures of the deities in his room. He was sitting on the small couch in an abstracted mood. A few devotees were on the floor. There was silence in the room. An hour passed. Ishan and Kishori entered and sat down on the floor after saluting Sri Ramakrishna. Ishan was a great ritualist. He was devoted to the performance of the various rites and ceremonies prescribed by the scriptures. The master opened the conversation. Can anyone attain knowledge of God by merely repeating the word God? There are two indications of such knowledge. First, longing, that is to say, love for God. You may indulge in reasoning or discussion, but if you feel no longing or love, it is all futile. Second, the awakening of the Kundalini. As long as the Kundalini remains asleep, you have not attained knowledge of God. You may be spending hours poring over books or discussing philosophy, but if you have no inner restlessness for God, you have no knowledge of Him. When the Kundalini is awakened, one attains bhava, bhakti, prema, and so on. This is the path of devotion. The master rose and went to the Kali temple. He looked at the image, took some sacred flowers from the feet of the mother, and placed them on his head. He prostrated himself before the mother and went round the image. He waved the chamara. He appeared ecstatic with divine fervor. Coming out, he found Ishan performing the sandhya with the Kosakusi. What? You are still here? Are you still performing the sandhya? Listen to a song. Why should I go to Ganja or Gaya, to Kashi, Kanchi, or Prabhas, so long as I can breathe my last with Kali's name upon my lips? What need of rituals has a man? What need of devotions anymore? If he repeats the mother's name at the three holy hours, rituals may pursue him close, but never can they overtake him. Charity, vows, and giving of gifts do not appeal to my mind. The blissful mother's lotus feet are my whole prayer and sacrifice. How long must a man continue the sandhya? As long as he has not developed love for the lotus feet of God, as long as he does not shed tears and his hair does not stand on end when he repeats God's name. I bow my head before desire and liberation. Knowing the secret that Kali is one with the highest Brahman, I have discarded once and for all both righteousness and sin. When the fruit grows off, the flower drops. When one has developed love of God and has beheld Him, then one gives up the sandhya and other rites. When the young daughter is with child, the mother-in-law reduces her activities. When she has been pregnant for 9 months, she is not allowed to perform any household duty. After the birth of the child, she only carries the child on her arm and nurses it. She has no other duty. After the attainment of God, the sandhya and other rites are given up. You cannot achieve anything by moving at such a slow pace. You need stern renunciation. Can you achieve anything by counting 15 months as a year? You seem to have no strength. Be up and doing. You ask me why you don't feel stern renunciation. There is a reason. You have desires and tendencies within you. In our part of the country, I have seen peasants bringing water into their paddy fields. The fields have low ridges on all sides to prevent the water from leaking out. But these are made of mud and often have holes here and there. The peasants work themselves to death to bring the water, which, however, leaks out through the holes. Desires are the holes. You practice japa and austerities, no doubt, but they all leak out through the holes of your desires. What are these things you busy yourself with, this arbitration and leadership? I hear that you settle people's quarrels and that they make you the arbiter. You have to be doing this kind of work a long time. Let those who care for such things do them. Now devote your mind more and more to the lotus feet of God. Sambhu, too, said, I shall build hospitals and dispensaries. He was a devotee of God, so I said to him, will you ask God for hospitals and dispensaries when you see him? Keshab Sen asked me, why do I not see God? I said, you do not see God because you busy yourself with such things as name and fame and scholarship. The mother does not come to the child as long as it sucks its toy, but when after a few minutes it throws the toy away and cries, then the mother takes the rice pot off the hearth and comes running to the child. Arbitration and leadership, how trifling these are. Charity and doing good to others, you have had enough of these. Those who are to devote themselves to such things belong to a different class. Now the time is ripe to devote yourself and your mind to the lotus feet of God. If you realize God, you will get everything else. First God, then charity, then doing good to others, then doing good to the world and redeeming people. Why need you worry about these things? I prayed to the Divine Mother, O Mother, I don't want name and fame. I don't want the 8 occult powers. I don't want 100 occult powers. O Mother, I have no desire for creature comforts. Please, Mother, grant me the boon that I may have pure love for thy lotus feet. Be mad with love of God. Let people know that Ishan has gone mad and cannot perform worldly duties anymore. Then people will no longer come to you for leadership and arbitration. That's the thing. Shivanath once said, that one loses one's head by thinking too much of God. What? Said I. Can anyone ever become unconscious by thinking of consciousness? God is the nature of eternity, purity, and consciousness. Through his consciousness, one becomes conscious of everything. Through his intelligence, the whole world appears intelligent. The devotees listened spellbound to Sri Ramakrishna. His burning words entered their souls, spurring them along the path of renunciation. Ishan was seated touching Sri Ramakrishna's feet and listening to his words. Now and then he cast a glance at the basalt image of Kali in the shrine